Labor Radio is pleased to have Jim Sinclair, president of the BC Federation of Labor, as a guest today. Thank you, Jim, for agreeing to this interview.
Hey, no problem. It's a pleasure to be here, especially on Labor Radio. It doesn't happen often, you know.
No. Jim, I want to talk about the HEU legislation, Bill 37. The corporate media reported that you, along with other BC Fed officers, were present at the discussions with the provincial Liberals. Is this true?
Absolutely. There was a number of officers and myself, and you're talking about after? Like we got to get the sequence correct here. What happened was we weren't present at all until Bill 37 came down.
Right.
At that point, the right to strike disappeared for the HEU, and they were now on what would later be ruled an illegal strike action in the public sector, in the healthcare sector. There was a meeting with the leaders of the HEU where we agreed that we would approach the government and demand that they continue to discuss and change certain aspects of the bill. And that discussion took place on Thursday, and the first meeting with the Labor Minister was on Friday.
Okay. I was talking more or less along the lines of the final meeting. I guess there would be the leading up to Sunday night before the Monday supposed strike that was going to happen.
Well, there was a number of meetings before then at which the HU, four members of the HU, were involved in all of them. Leading up into the discussion on Sunday night, there was a number of back and forths with the government. We were obviously, they were had decided that rather than keep their public position, which was we shall not negotiate while people are on the streets, they understood that no one was going back until the bill was changed. And so they opened up negotiations or discussions. I wouldn't call it really negotiations. It wasn't free collective bargaining. It was really the labor movement pushing back, trying to, as a priority, save jobs of the HU members. I'd also point out that the HU executive, the entire provincial executive, was also in the same hotel we were and being a part of the discussions of where this was going. This was clearly the HU strike, not the labor movement strike. Yes, we were there to support them, and I'm damn proud of the labor movement, but at the end of the day, it was a decision of the HEU executive which took down the picket lines and sent their members back to work. A decision, by the way, which I think was a very responsible and right decision for them to take.
What do you mean by right decision?
Well, you know, the decision they could have made was not to go back to work and to try to continue on with the strike, and I think that wouldn't have been the right one. But again, they looked at the situation and said, what was our priority here? Save jobs. And for the most part, thousands of jobs were saved by the pushback of the HEU and the rest of the labor movement.
So what was the atmosphere like in the talks with the government? Were they capitulary or?
Listen, I don't really want to describe all the ins and outs of how that takes place. I mean, that's collective bargaining and, negotiations, discussions about the bill. They clearly did not want to change it. Let's go back to Wednesday night. Wednesday night, the government passed the bill, and they thought they were done. That bill, retroactive pay cuts, no job security at all. Okay, nothing at all. In fact, the estimations of the HU are about 8,000 more jobs would have gone in the next two years. And that's based on the government figures and their own estimations. So on Wednesday night, the government had decided that the HU could be pushed farther. And by Sunday night, they were pushed back. I think that's the point we got to talk about, is did we push back? And how did that happen? That happened because the labor movement united and said to the HEU, we're with you. Not only in the public sector, but private sector unions as well said, okay, it's time, push back. We're willing to put pressure on the private sector in this economy to put pressure on the Liberals to get things happening. That's what I believe happened. And that's the only reason they agreed to back down.
So you believe that the labor movement won in this situation?
Well, it's hard to describe victory when people are taking 15% pay cuts. Let's be honest about that. That's not victory. What they did was, and what we did win, we won jobs for thousands of HEU members. Yes. Collectively, people are still going to have a job and live to fight another day, and that's important. And they're going to be in the public sector. They're going to work for the public sector and be there to participate in the fight to save healthcare in a union where they should be, the HEU.
Okay.
I think that is a victory. The fact that the pay was not retroactive, well, that did save thousands of dollars, millions of dollars from workers' pockets. And there was $25 million to go to people who would be laid off, an average of about $10,000 a person in addition to their regular severance pay. That's a good thing for a worker that's facing a layoff. So in that sense, there was a victory. But the bigger victory really is we have to defeat the government. We have to push them back, and ultimately we have to defeat this government. There won't be victories for working people until that happens.
That leads me to the next question. That's about the BC Fed Action Plan.
Right.
I was at the last two BC Fed conventions, and in 2002 it was passed unanimously. In 2003 there was some opposition. People were in favor of a general strike and didn't think the plan went far enough.
Right.
What impact do you think the action plan had on the events of 2 weeks ago? Did it have an impact? Was the action plan being followed?
Well, the action plan at the last convention called for a strategic plan to be developed around four critical areas. And I would say, yeah, coordinated bargaining, yes. The HEU experienced the highest degree of support that any unions experienced in this province for a number of years. And that certainly was the sentiment of the floor of that convention, and certainly was the sentiment of the leadership of the labor movement. The sentiment was the government's gone too far in this case, and we're not only going to push back rhetorically, which is what we've normally done, but we're also going to push back by employees and unions are willing to take job action to support the HEU, and they did. And I think that that was something we have to look at as a labor movement, and Campbell has to look at and say, there is a line here. It throws the province into a dramatic situation when they go too far as a government. And I think that's the message to them, to the government, is the momentum's going the other way now, and people are standing up in different ways than they have in the past.
Weren't the government going too far 2 years ago when the action plan
absolutely
was developed?
Absolutely, the government was going too far, but our membership wasn't there.
Wasn't there until just now.
Sorry?
Wasn't there until just now.
Well, I think that we saw things that we haven't seen before. I think that an objective view of this would say that when they brought in that legislation that for the second time tore up the collective agreements of healthcare workers, imposed a 15% pay cut, and then offered no job security to them at all, I think people went, these guys are wrong. And actually the public did too. One of the things that happened during this strike was that the public in the main and in the majority supported the healthcare workers during their strike. That was really a statement of anti-government feeling and pro-union, pro-healthcare worker, particularly what was happening to these women in the healthcare system. That was very positive for us as a labor movement.
The action plan also calls for getting involved in the provincial election. Does it also include the federal election?
Those things are both there, and we are involved in talking to our members and working. The CLC and the Federation have a major campaign. We're going out to hundreds and hundreds of work sites. We're talking politics, what's important. I think we have an obligation in the labor movement to talk to people about why politics make a difference and why the governments you elect have a dramatic impact on what's going to happen to your public services and to the people who deliver them. We have a Liberal government that's running that's committed to P3s, to the privatization of public services. They are publicly on record saying that. We have a Liberal government that's running that was responsible for, and the man in charge of that Liberal government, responsible for the biggest cuts in federal budgets and transfer payments in the history of the country. I remember walking in the street with, Public Service Alliance people 10 years ago when Martin brought in his first budget cut transfer payments, the one that Gordon Campbell said, geez, they should have cut more. The same guy who's complaining now about the cuts. So we have a Liberal government that's running that basically hates workers, hates our paychecks, and hates what we do for a living. We have an alliance party that wants to go faster, that thinks we should destroy the country faster, and are now announced today the most regressive tax policy I've seen in years, which is once you're rich enough to fill up your RSP levels, you can then invest some money and you don't have to pay tax when you take it out. So he's taken the cap off of the tax shelters for the wealthy. At the same time, that party's not even committed to public health care anymore. So, yes, we're definitely involved in these elections, and I think working people have to be more involved in democracy, not less, because the more we leave it to the right wing to run governments, the more we pay a price and our kids pay a price.
Okay. You talked about the reduction of transfer payments to the provinces, which I think is the real cause of the healthcare crisis that we have right now. Going into the next rounds of negotiations, we have the nurses and we have the teachers that are going into bargaining. Do you think that the unity that Labour showed behind Bill 37 will show up in the negotiations that these parties have with the government?
Well, that would certainly be our objective, no question about it. I think that we have to continue to build on what we did. We sent a very strong message to the government and to the province, and I believe that those workers, teachers, not just teachers, nurses, health science professionals, school board employees, all people who have been attacked by this government, had their contracts ripped up in the past, are going to be looking for the labor movement for support, and I'm going to try, as I did with the HEU and the healthcare workers, to organize and provide as much solidarity through the labor movement as possible. I think we went to a new place with the HEU, and I think we have to keep building from that new place, not go backwards.
Good. What does labor see as a solution to the rising cost of healthcare?
Well, there's a number of solutions, but the first thing I would say is healthcare costs are going to rise. I can't buy a car for the same price I could 10 years ago. I can't buy a house for, Christ, 3 weeks ago I can't buy a house for the same price. I can't buy most things for the same price. Where I can buy cheaper products is usually because we're having kids make them, or some cheap labor somewhere make them. So we've got to just forget this idea that healthcare costs are going to be never go up, or that we can contain them. The only way we contain them is to screw the workers or stop providing the services. So we have to get over that and say, you know what, to have a good healthcare system, to have a good country, costs money. To have public services, you got to pay for them. And the problem is working people are paying more and more and getting less and less. And the tax system has become so skewed towards the wealthy in their favor that it's become, we've got a polarized society. And that's really the problem we're facing right now, is the gaps getting bigger between the middle class and the working class and the rich. And the poor are getting marginalized even more. And so we need to say, let's not fight on the other hand. Yeah, we need to do healthcare more efficiently, more prevention, more integration. All those things are true. I agree with that. Sat on the health board for 4 years. We did some of that. There's a clinic right down the street from where we're sitting right now that was part of that vision, an integrated local community clinic that would actually have the social workers, the home care workers, the doctors, the nurses, the professionals. They would all be in that place so they could deal with people as whole people and not as a walk, you know, doc in a box kind of stuff we're getting now with these walk-in clinics. Anyway, there's that stuff we can do, but we also have to accept that it's going to cost more money and that we're going to have to pay more money, and part of being more productive as a society and having more wealth and generating more wealth is you've got to share that. For instance, $200 million in savings a year by cutting wages 15% for 40,000 healthcare workers. Same figure, $200 million, 8,000 British Columbians, their tax cut in 1 year from the Liberals. What would have made this economy work better, and what would have made healthcare work better? Giving 8,000 people who are probably already millionaires a $200 million tax cut, or allowing at least the people who provide the services and take care of you and me when we're sick the money to go and do those services, the fair wages it takes to provide those people with the jobs they need. I mean, who are the losers here? Healthcare workers and patients. Who are the winners? The richest British Columbians. And I would put to you, those rich British Columbians wouldn't care if they didn't get that tax cut, because they're not greedy folks necessarily. And our polling shows that some of those people think that we should pay more taxes. And actually, most British Columbians don't mind paying fair taxes, because we do realize that we have a pretty good place to live. But if you don't maintain it, it's not good anymore.
Has the Federation of Labor reviewed the tax rates between British Columbia, different provinces, and the United States, and how do we stand?
You know what? Despite all of the whining from the business sector and all those other people, we actually have a competitive advantage over most U.S. cities. Our taxes are kind of a wash, because there's two kinds of taxes, okay? There's the personal income tax, and that's the money we all pay to have our services, okay? They don't make a big issue about competitiveness. And then there's corporate taxes. Our corporate taxes are slightly higher than some places in the United States, but corporations here get a free ride on Medicare. And let me tell you, that's a huge free ride in a competitive world. Because if you look at the United States, that's what's bankrupting major parts of their economy, is that the cost of caring the retirees plus the escalating private sector costs of healthcare are destroying whole industries and causing huge crises in the healthcare sector and in every other industrial sector. So we're very competitive. What we're doing here, though, is in British Columbia, we're destroying our competitive advantage. Because you see, the Liberal government thinks if we have $6 an hour wages and call centers and all that stuff and cheap labor, that we'll be competitive. Well, that's a bunch of crap, okay? Because we're not going to be competitive with cheap labor. What we're doing is we're raising hydro rates. We're going to market values on hydro rates. We're going to the private sector, so we're going to introduce the market to those areas. Every other place that's done that, disaster. They're in the paper today, the business guys whining about the hydro increase. Well, they ought to go whine at the friends they elected. So we're giving up a huge advantage to be competitive, which is cheap, secure. Big question, secure. We know we got power every day. It's not blackouts every third day or every tenth day. We got cheap, secure power, and we're giving that away to a few corporate folks to make a lot of money off us. Absolute disaster. Natural gas, fuels the economy. We're giving it away across the border every day. We're not getting our value for that at all. And we're giving away jobs. Every time we send a kilowatt across the border or a gigawatt of power or oil and gas, we're giving away our resources. And we've shut down universities for working class kids now, just about. And we've shut down education opportunities. We're shutting down the apprenticeship branch. Bottom line, we're taking away the things that modern economies need to compete. A skilled workforce, a safe work environment, and control of our natural resources, and cheap electricity. That's the basis of a new economy here. And they're giving away every one of them so that we can look more like Mexico or like the cheap labor countries that are being forced to those levels.
So it's a race to the bottom.
Well, that's what we're on. It is a race to the bottom, but you see, it's not just a race to the bottom. It's a race to the top for some folks and a race to the bottom for most of us. You got to keep that in mind. The highest crime rates in the world are in the two countries that have the biggest gap in wealth. Like, it all comes back to this gap in wealth. Unions are the greatest equalizers of wealth distribution ever in the world for working folks, okay, in civilization. And the bigger that gap gets, all the other things start to disappear. The social services crumble. The public sector crumbles. The whole desire to keep it crumbles, because as that crumbles, then the rich say, and so do working people, I want the better system. My kid's as important as the boss's kid. Wait a minute. And so we end up have the two-tiered society, three tiers, then we get six tiers. It turns into a mess. The best societies on the planet for you and me and workers, societies where they have a big, strong union movement, a big, strong government that taxes people fairly. Those are the societies where you don't have crime. Those are the society where you don't have violence. Those are the society where you actually have growing economic development at rates higher than the United States in the free market world. So,
what are Labor's plans with respect to the provincial's Liberals over the next year?
Fight.
Fight.
Fight. Fight hard. Fight everywhere we can. Continue to develop a plan and be part of planning to defeat them. But we got to fight at every turn. I mean, the RAV line was defeated because it was a P3 in part. Why? Because we fought like hell to do that. The BC Rail sell-off is being discredited from one end of that line to the next. It's a complete disaster for the Liberals, and we're still kicking hard to turn the thing over. 2 weeks ago, a bunch of citizens stopped the train. Maybe more of that will happen. More shareholder meetings on the tracks. Who knows? We got to keep fighting. We got to win at the bargaining table, but we got to win in the political arena. And we got to keep fighting for public education. We got to keep fighting for public health care. The P3s that are still coming in public education, got to fight them. And health care, got to fight them. And I think we have to do that. And I'm asking working people to build on the good stuff that happened around the HU and around the healthcare system and the mobilization of the labor movement, and continue to do that. Continue to be involved and to make sure that we run these people from office. The biggest gift we can give to the next generation is have a one-term right-wing government. Because a second term of these folks is going to be hell. This has been tough enough, thanks very much. But the second term, the rest of their agenda comes out. That means no unions. Or unions with no power, period. The destruction of the RAND formula. We just have to look at the United States or Australia or some of these other countries with right-wing governments. These folks aren't done. They're just getting going. And I think we can be proud of slowing them down on a lot of fronts. But we're going to have a big battle.
If you get a different government in power that supports labor and its issues, won't it be a long time to reverse all the changes and the destruction that Liberals have wreaked upon this province?
Well, it really depends on what you're talking about. It takes about, with a majority, about 2 days to pass legislation that puts back in place the employment standards, protections for children, the $6 an hour wage can disappear. I mean, there are a number of changes this government has made. We can refund the women's centers. We can do a whole lot of things like that. And we need to do those things. We can change the labor code so that workers then have rights again. All those things are done. They're done in the first term, a short period of time, actually. The first sitting, we can do a lot of changes that will improve the lives of British Columbians immediately. Immediately. But there are, you're right, governments like this do long-term damage to the system. They change rules. Free trade agreements tie our hands from changing those things back. If we don't defeat the BC Rail deal, the BC Rail deal will stand after the next election in all probability, because turning it over means being sued by the world court through the world courts for what we want to do. So yeah, this government can do damage. We can save hydro. They will not finish the agenda at BC Hydro. We will still own 90% of the production in this province. We will still have a company, two companies, and they won't be privatized yet. After the next election, if we lose, they will be. So we can do creative and exciting things. But don't get me wrong, it takes a long time to reverse this kind of stuff. No different than 1991, when the NDP took over in 1991 and had to reverse a lot of stuff over 10 years, put us back on the map educationally, provide opportunities for young people, change the labor code. Yeah, it took time.
All right. I appreciate the work you've been doing to protect the livelihood of British Columbians, and I thank you for your time, Jim.
Anytime.
Labor Radio's been speaking with Jim Sinclair, president of the BC Federation of Labor. I'm Shane Polak.